There's significant drama in Parshas Vayera. It begins with the visit of the angels. It concludes with, of course, the Akedah, the destruction of Sodom, the discharge of Yishmael. There's a double interaction with David Melech and the Plishtim, which sometimes gets eclipsed because it doesn't seem to provide as much drama. If anything, it seems to repeat the same errors of Parshas Lech Lecha, the lie. Obviously, the lie here that Sarah is Avram's sister resolves in a much more peaceful and embracing fashion rather than the confrontational fashion of Parshas Lech Lecha with Paro. But if there's part of the Avimelech drama that sometimes gets overlooked, it's that little piece, a little segment that's embedded between the discharge of Yishmael and the Akedah, and that very fact that it's written within that context is very notable, very significant. And it doesn't surround the most dramatic location of Parshas Vayera, namely Har HaMoriah Yerushalayim. It surrounds the second location listed in the Parsha, which is, of course, the first Jewish city in history, Beersheba. Avram was being hosted until now, and that hosting is very blatant because the first Gilui Shechina appears or occurs in the fields of Mamre, not in the fields of Avram. So Avram is a guest. He obviously has a home, but he's residing in his home as a guest. But the first Jewish city is Beersheba, and we don't yet know how it became Jewish. The origins appear in that first episode with Avimelech, as opposed to Paro, who quickly spirits Avram out of the country. Avimelech showers Avram with wealth, livestock, servants, returns Sarah, and he invites him to stay a while. Hinei artzi lefanecha, batov be'enecha shev. So this is very generous. Presumably, Avram takes him up on his offer, and then, of course, we witness the birth of Yitzchak and the discharge and discarding of Yishmael, the second journey of Hagar into the desert. And then, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Avimelech and his military sergeant, Fichol, visit Avram. Now, there are some very, very ominous insinuations. Why would Avimelech be accompanied by his security team? But there's very little that's directly confrontational or overtly, explicitly militant about this. Especially the way that Avimelech introduces himself. So it's clear that Avram has taken Avimelech up on his offer. He's living somewhere near Avimelech. And Avimelech wants to reinforce their partnership. He wants to reinforce it with an oath. So there's no mention of responding to a crisis, responding to friction or tension. His partner, who had offered him land, now wants to institutionalize this partnership through an oath. So Avram accepts the oath, but at that point he rebukes Avimelech because the wells that he had dug were tampered with. They were stolen. You can't steal a well, but they drew the water, they tampered with it. Remember, in Parshas told us, Yitzchak will suffer the closure of these wells, the stuffing up, the ruination of these wells. Avram's just absorbing skirmishes surrounding wells. He's had this before. He's had tensions between him and Lot about the lack of pasture land, but now it's about water. And we don't even see Avimelech, we see some of his subjects or his servants. And Avimelech seems to be very innocent. Lo yadati mi asasa dabar hazeh. I don't know who did it. And somehow this oath transitions into a treaty, a bris. A bris hatched around 7 sheep. And Avimelech doesn't understand the reason for the sheep, but Avram is a little bit more worried than Avimelech. He wants this to be not just an oath, but a covenant around sheep. And the location becomes known as Be'er Shava, at which case Avimelech and Fichol depart. They return to the land of the Plishtim on the coast, as opposed to the midpoint. Beersheba is in the middle of the the width of Israel. And Avram plants an Eshel in Be'er Sheva. And then he departs and he leaves Eretz Plishtim, where he stays many days. It's not clear where he is and why he left Be'er Sheva. Obviously, this parsha has a lot more unknown and vague about it than certainty. But one thing is clear. Be'er Sheva is an iconic experience. Yitzchak will live in Be'er Sheva and he'll try to re-entrench himself. Yaakov will visit Be'er Sheva on his way descending to Mitzrayim and have that dream in which Hashem assures him he will return him and return with him from Mitzrayim. And certainly that section in Parshas Vayigash highlights the fact that Be'er Sheva is the southern boundary that Yaakov sojourns in before he makes his fateful leap into Galus, into Chutz Laaretz. So there's something about Be'er Sheva as the boundary, and Avram, wherever he walks, is establishing the boundary of Eretz Yisrael, and aside from that quick descent into Egypt, coerced or impelled by the famine, we don't have any record of Avram visiting locations south of Be'er Sheva. So this is his most southerly visit. There's something about Be'er Sheva that's iconic about our attempts to settle the land. This is the first attempt to settle the land. Now, what's interesting about this is it's almost unfair to read this struggle for Be'er Sheva, which begins in Vayera in very muted terms and explodes in toldos in terms that could be confrontational and adversarial. It's hard to incorporate this within the battle over Eretz Yisrael between the children of Yishmael and the children of Yitzchak, which occupies most of our attention in the current context. We struggle with the Arab world over possession of the land of Israel. But at this point, Yishmael is no longer a player. Abimelech is clearly not a member of Yishmael's party. He belongs to a group that inhabits the seashore, the Plishtim. So there's something else about Eretz Yisrael that isn't obvious, that the Jews can simply march into Eretz Yisrael and assume their rightful ownership. And to a degree, keep in mind, this will resurface in different contexts in Parshas Chayesara, where Avram has to struggle again with non-Arabs, non-Yishmaelites, over the land of Hebron, and there's a different saga there. And again, it seems as if, just to differentiate it from Hebron, that the struggle in Chayesara is about land, in this case, burial plot for Sarah, whereas Vayera doesn't appear to be about land acquisition, because Abimelech is not looking to displace Avram. To be honest, he's even unaware of any tensions. It's about water rights and sustainability in the land of Israel, and they're stealing the bear. But one thing's obvious, that this is a struggle. It's not a militant struggle, but it's a struggle to establish. Remember, this is Avram's first home that he won't be hosted. He's trying to create his own identity rather than be just a guest, as Abimelech had suggested, in Eretz Yisrael. And it's tough sledding. It's an uphill battle. And probably the best way to capture the fact that it's an uphill battle is that there's one name, but that name, at least in Parshas Vayera, encapsulates two different components of this struggle to establish stability, permanence, and to retain water rights. The Be'er can only be solidified through a joint shvua, which is how the Torah refers to Alkein Karala Makomahu Be'er Sheva, Kisham Nishvu Shnehem. So there's a contractual obligation, an oath, and an oath which carries a very heavy price. It's not clear what price Avram will pay. It seems to, in the pasuk, be just to maintain friendly relations and to reciprocate the chesed. But Chazal tell us that this was an oath that the Jewish people would not unseat Abimelech's descendants for seven generations. And ultimately, Chazal tell us that created a difficulty in settling the city of Yerushalayim, because the Yevusim who were inhabiting the city of Yerushalayim were descendants of Abimelech, and there was an oath preventing the capture. It's not just that the Yevusim had a fortress area, Migdal Tzion, but they also had an oath preventing Jewish incursion. And they erected statues, and these statues were meant to mock the Jews. So the relationship between Avraham and Abimelech very quickly went south. and I'll, amongst the descendants, and I'll cross the length of Shear about those statues, the statues of the lame people and of the blind people, which were erected in Yerushalayim as a legal barrier for Jewish settlement. So there's a very heavy price to pay. To a degree, the acquisition of Be'er Sheva comes at the cost of Yerushalayim. Or, in more of a modern political context, the world is willing to let Jews live in Be'er Sheva, less willing to let Jews live in Yerushalayim. So there's an exchange. We'll let you live in Be'er Sheva, but the price will be the struggle over Yerushalayim. But it's obvious that the name Be'er Sheva, from the context of the Parsha, far supersedes the oath. It's also a reflection of the seven sheep that were offered as part of his bris. And it's hard not to think about the bris Bein HaBisarim with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Parshas Lech Lecha. And now Avraham has to, degrade himself, but he has to grovel and petition and basically employ the same framework, the same technique that he employed with HaKadosh Baruch Hu about large, historical, transcendent issues of Jewish history and future. Now he has to enact a treaty over a little piece of land, or not even a piece of land, but a well or a cistern. It's a seven calves about the well. The language of the pasuk is very, very dispiriting, because Avimelech is unaware. Why is this such a parade of animals? And Avram says, I need seven sheep in order to verify and certify that I dug the well. And of course, there's a third entendre, not just a double entendre to the name Be'er Sheva, because it takes seven different attempts in Parshas Toldos for Yitzchak to actually create a well that isn't being dismantled or isn't being neutralized by what end up being adversaries in Parshas Toldos. So it seems as if, at the very least, there's a process, and it won't happen immediately, of settling Eretz Yisrael. And it seems as if there are prices to pay. 1948, we received certain lands, we had to pay a price, and we surrendered to Yerushalayim. And now, Baruch Hashem, we've returned to Yerushalayim, but there are prices even of that return. It seems as if Jewish people are destined to acquire this supernatural land through very legal contractual methods. Even though it's a messianic process, it still courses and pulses through history, and it's encapsulated or incorporated within historical or within human convention. Oaths, contracts, treaties. It's also clear that friends will become enemies and that supporters will become opponents. So Parshas Vayera has some very innocent, friendly, collegial relationships, but those turn sour already in Toldos, and they become confrontational in the days of David HaMelech. But it's clear that it's about a bear and a boar, not about the land itself, because Avimelech never raises opposition to Jewish presence. He raises opposition to Jewish presence in a way that's entrenched with a boar. If you don't have a boar, you'll move from land to land. If you have a boar or a be'er, really the be'er is really a freshwater spring, whereas a boar is a cistern, but for our purposes, it would be the same. I'm learning Baba Kama now, so the word boar is very much on my mind. It's actually a be'er, not boar sheva, but be'er sheva. And that reality, that Avimelech is not opposed to Avram's living there, or even living there permanently, but he's opposed, or at least there's some latent opposition to digging a be'er or establishing a be'er, is highlighted by the very next sentence, because before Avram travels to the Plishtim location, he plants an eshel and he begins to proselytize. Vayita eshel be'er sheva vayiko sham b'shem Hashem kevalam. So the word sham emphasizes the fact that in that very location that he was not allowed to dig a be'er or construct a be'er, he was allowed, possibly even encouraged, to preach religion. So the overall image that emerges from this episode is of the Jews establishing their first city, establishing it through legal means rather than supernatural delivery, as you would have expected, as Hashem's promises should develop, and to a degree as Har HaMoriah is selected through supernatural non-human, beyond human conventions of Akedah, which humans can't understand. This is very much deeply entrenched and anchored to the human experience of contracts. There's a very heavy price to pay, according to Chazal. Essentially, we're bartering Yerushalayim for Be'er Sheva. And it's not our choice, but not bartering it in terms of surrendering it, but creating obstacles towards the conquest or the settlement of Yerushalayim. The fact that one city bears a name that reflects three different parts of that struggle just highlights how much of a process it is. And doesn't seem to be about land, it seems to be about identity for the land. They're stealing something from Avram, allowing him to remain there, encouraging him to remain there, in Eretz Yisrael, and even allowing him to plant trees, which is a sign of permanence, and certainly allowing a religious process to unfold. But not allowing the Be'er, not allowing that Be'er to fully, fully entrench themselves in the land. I'm sure, obviously, in Kabbalah and Chassidus, Be'er has many, many different connotations, but at least at a literary level, they allow them to be there and to plant trees, but they're stealing something about the Jewish aspiration. When I read the Pasuk of Eshel and spreading the word and projecting, so just to update people who may not be aware and to reinforce those who are aware, there's a major project in Eretz Yisrael today to develop the Negev, and not just to develop the Negev based in part on demographic pressures in the center of this country, but to turn the entire Negev into a hub centered around Be'er Sheva, but all the outlying areas, Yerucham and Dimona, and obviously building new sections and large-scale development turned into a technological sector, as well as the central command for the entire army operations. We're building a large, large army base that will far surpass and dwarf previous army installations. So, for people who feel that the experiences of Tanakh are very prevalent and latent in the modern evolution of the modern state of Israel, not in a way that's a one-to-one correspondence, you can read a pasuk and immediately chart it or track it to developments in the state of Israel, but it's in general developments and general realities. So we certainly feel that Be'er Sheva, being the first Jewish city and being iconic because it captured the struggle, and to a degree the struggle that doesn't reflect the Arab-Israel struggle. One could claim it's probably centered on Yerushalayim. The Akedah symbolizes that, because the Akedah reinforces and cements the selection of Yitzchak and the discarding of Yishmael. And those who are familiar, of course, the Quran swaps in Yishmael for Yitzchak, so that's a theological selection, and that's all or nothing, and certainly reflects the Arab opposition to Arab being in the land. But there's a sub-drama that the world at large is represented by Avimelech, allows Jews to be in Israel, blunts their interest in Yerushalayim, but even in Israel, allows their presence without full sovereignty, represented by a Be'er, but with a high degree of sovereignty, represented by the Eshel, and is happy that Jews living in Israel represent Hashem, but don't want that to extend to the level of entrenchment that a Be'er would signify. So to be honest, I'm not completely certain of the complete, conclusive message of Be'er Sheva beyond what I've just outlined, but it's certainly a parasha to be read historically and iconically.